Episode 218.
We don't have a system for training technicians in this country. No licensing, no standardized training. Everybody does their own thing. You know, we're going to be looking at 2 million, shortage of 2 million skilled workers in the next few years, especially with more of the baby boomers retiring.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio. And a special interview from an auto care industry professional.
On Point.
Welcome, aftermarket professionals, to episode 218 of Remarkable Results Radio with my guest, educator Rick Escalombre. Hey, I'm Carm Capriotto, and I'm fundamentally changing the behavior of how aftermarket professionals get their information, training, insights, and strategies. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts, and they are the reason you enjoy these interviews twice per week. Now, when you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Sealed Power, FP Diesel, and more. They are the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. Hey, I hope you get a chance to visit the episode show notes that are created for every guest. They get their own page with interview talking points, additional bio information, and if available, additional photos and their company logo. Now, you can find this week's show notes with Rick Escalombre at remarkableresults.biz/E218. Hey, thanks for your support and being a faithful listener and fan of the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Now, keep in mind you have listening choices. The show is on most all top and popular podcast digital broadcast sites and my own app on your iOS or Android platform. Hey, a shout out to my new LinkedIn connections, Robert Pulverenti and Nick Lenhart. And welcome to the recent Facebook friends, Tom Dorsey, Lyle McFadden, Al Sutherland, and Robert Henderson. Hey, connecting is easy. Go to remarkableresults.biz/social and find all the links there. And when you have the urge to send me an email, it's carm@remarkableresults.biz. Hey, there is no greater pleasure than to be in my studio behind the mic with my guests on the screen in front of me and ready to dive into the stories of their world. And one of the top pleasures is to interview educators. You know, teachers, especially automotive technology, are responsible for so many of my listeners' careers. Think back on your career start. Many of you attended a high school auto tech program and went on to post-secondary. I'm sure you're grateful for all the formal education you've had and continue to get. Now, meet my guest, Rick Escalombre. You'll notice his energy and enthusiasm, even though he is a retired instructor from Skyline College in San Bruno, California, after 31 years. Now, he shows no signs of slowing down and continues to teach in an adjunct role and as a contract trainer throughout the industry. Rick is a respected author and editor of books in the field of engine performance, evaporative emission systems, and computer controls. And Rick was honored in 2015 as the Educator of the Year by Vision High Tech Training and Expo. His goal is to provide information that will help teachers and technicians perform their respective jobs more effectively. Now, we covered a lot of ground in this interview. He's a very passionate person with a lot on his mind, and he isn't afraid to share it. We talked about the need for instructors to have time for research, the Vision Educators Think Tank, why shop owners need to get involved in education, that we need some form of licensing and a standard training model for all post-secondary schools, and also why service professional independents need to recruit from colleges. He also talked about what to look for in hiring a recent graduate. These topics and a lot more with Rick, as you've come to expect on the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Now, here is episode 218 with educator Rick Escalombre. Here we go. Rick, glad to see you, man.
Good to see you, Carm. It was a pleasure to meet you at Vision for the first time.
Yeah, I was about ready to say, I think we were having breakfast together, sitting right across from each other. We started our conversation, and I knew you were a highly respected individual there. What brought you to Vision?
Let's see, I started Vision 2012 at the NACAT Winnipeg. I had people like Bruce Amaker, Jim Morton, George Menchu, and a few others say to me that I needed to apply for Vision. So I did, and I was fortunate enough to do workshops that year for instructors and technicians. And I've been part of the Vision crew since, including the Educator Think Tank panel discussion. So it's been a real honor to be part of Vision and meet all the wonderful people I have there.
Can we talk about the Think Tank like right now? I mean, that was such an incredible event. You pulled that together, didn't you?
Well, I think we have a committee that's been working together now for, this is the fourth year. It's been a wonderful committee to work with. Their goals are to help address the technician shortage and other issues in the industry regarding education and industry, which we know there's a divide there at times. And so this committee's worked very hard along with Sherry Hamilton to get the word out that we have to address this because our industry's in dire straits if we don't address it.
It's so true. What was, you know, if you look back at the think tank, what was the biggest takeaway that you had from it?
I think the, well, on the educator side, I think it's like everything else. The educators that are there are the ones that are involved. They have a feel for what's going on, but there's so many that don't get out of their colleges, don't get out of their high schools because of funding or other reasons to become engaged. When you engage your program like with the outside industry, it improves it tremendously. For the industry, there's a great amount of tremendous amount of people out there, but their ability to understand the education side of it is always comes up a little bit short. Their expectations are a little bit too high. Involvement with education programs are a little short for some from some technicians or shop owners. Those are the two things that I think we need to close the gap on. We don't have a system for training technicians in this country. No licensing, no standardized training. Everybody does their own thing.
You just said a mouthful, and there is no doubt you could talk for an hour or two on that, I bet.
It's a sensitive subject with me. I think you had a chance. I don't know if you had a chance to read that article I wrote about disjointed. I respect this industry. I've been part of it for 45 years, but we are a disjointed industry. Yet we're one of the most highest revenue generating industries in the country, probably in the world. But when it comes to being united, we're divided.
Yeah, I mean, you go on in the article to say the only legal requirements are that they register themselves as a business and obtain an ARD license, and you're talking about California, and there's no industry technical standards that they must meet to perform automotive repair. And then you go on to say, and this is the big thing here, I think it's a question, if the industry doesn't set standards that reflect the technical competence required to service and repair today's vehicles, our commitment to customer service will continue to be suspect. Wow, that's it.
That original article was written in 2003 after 9/11. It came to my mind. I was writing it for the California Automotive Teachers, and it just hit home. I've been involved in both aspects of the industry, shop owner, manager station, taught for 36 years, combination everything, and I love this industry, but we are definitely disjointed, and if we don't pull our act together, it's as I said at the end of the article, we're the Rodney Dangerfields. We don't get the respect because it's a lot to what we do with ourselves. We're independent. The auto word independent in the automotive industry is probably the worst word we've ever put in the industry. We are independent.
What's step one? What do we got to do? Start doing?
Well, the cat's out of the bag, and the problem is we have no one that's going to step up and do any form of licensing. I know NASDEF Education Committee, which I'm part of, they're trying to develop a nationwide plan to come up with a standardized training program. But as I've mentioned to them, there's a lot of good model schools out there to work from, to develop from. The problem is to get the government to recognize it. And I don't know if that's a good involvement, but if we don't standardize it at some level, best example I give you, California has 77 community college automotive programs. 77 programs are doing their own thing, and there's no standardization.
That's disjointed. Is it the same in engineering or medical?
No, I think there's more uniformity there. There are more standardized procedures than we have. Without licensing, without some standardized form of requirements to open a repair shop, we are always going to have issues.
Okay, Rick, if it's not the government, hi, I'm the government and I'm your partner. If it's not the government, and we would hope it wouldn't be, do you have a feel for what needs to happen on a national basis to put an umbrella on this?
Well, I hope there'd be one organization that we have that would be able to stand up and grab the bull by the horns and help us create a procedure that will work. But I don't think that's going to happen because, I mean, we work closely with ASA through Vision. In California, we have Automotive Service Councils of California, who used to be rather big and powerful. We used to do what Vision does twice a year in California, and they've decreased in their size and their power. So they're focused on local things in the state. Those are two of the organizations that I thought could help drive something like this, but it's so much bigger than both of them.
You know, without trying to be political and really start a little bonfire here, ASE should be maybe taking the baton?
ASE is obviously their certification. They're not a performance certification. I think the best model we have near to us is Canada. They have a true apprenticeship program. They're gearing people up in all the trades, which we're going to be so short of in all areas in the next few years. We're going to have such a shortage of skilled technicians. But Canada has, I call what I have a model. They have standards. They say, if you want to work in this country, in this area, you must do this. You must show proficiency in this. We don't do that.
Do you know anything that's going on in Michigan?
No, I'm not familiar with what Michigan's doing.
They've got something on the books, and I think they're working on technicians licensing. And I'm not sure that you know that's where you want to go, or if it's a shop standard or it's a individual standard. There's hundreds of thousands of tech shop owners in this industry of ours, and there's 300,000 answers to the solution. You're so right about that. Well, thanks for writing those articles and kind of inciting a riot or two. So you taught for how many years? 36?
I had 5.5 years at the high school level, and then 31 years. It's the last 31 years at Skyline College in San Bruno.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. What are the techs saying about your visit?
Every single time that I set up a training, I try to position the van inside the shop. You're part of their house at that point. Whenever you set aside that time, you tell them that you're coming in, you're providing a lunch, and you're really bringing something of meat and value to the table. Once they get a taste of it, really, by the time you're done, they're asking, when can you come back?
When can you come back? Or, hey, what else you got in your bag of tricks?
Exactly. Exactly.
So the greatest outcome of your visit to a professional shop?
Is just to really make a difference in their everyday procedures to maximize the premium end of the product that's being installed. But ultimately, for me being a NIC shop owner as well, is to maximize their profitability in installing the part right the first time and having a happy customer. I always say happy customer is like a happy wife. Happy wife, happy life. Same thing goes with the customer.
I've heard that before. So you take a Wagner OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
First off, they're floored with the cut design on the front end. They'd never seen a brake pad like this before. And then you start to break it down into why it's cut the way it is and how it's application or platform specific, how the backing plates are no longer painted, they're zinc coated, and that's for tolerance level, so that way you don't have buildup on the ears and fitting into the hardware. I mean, you get into all the little nuances that they've changed around with that brake pad on top of the performance end of it. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then once they physically try the brake pad, either on a customer's car or their own vehicle, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about the brake pad.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Skyline, I hear so much about Skyline. What was your favorite? I mean, what did you love to teach?
Oh, I taught engine performance all those years. We decided many years ago at our college to specialize. And I'm so thankful we did, because to try to do bumper to bumper today and teach 3 or 4 preps a day is very difficult. To be able to specialize in one area, try to be as good as you can in that area, has really paid dividends for all our staff and for me personally.
I love what you said about specialization. You see the shops moving there someday? Or more? I know they're there, but do you see more of that?
I think to survive down the road, I think there's going to have to be more specialization. There's always going to be the cream of the crop shops that are, they've set themselves up, they've trained themselves, they've equipped themselves. They're going to do well with many, many vehicles. But the average shop out there is going to have to decide, what are we going to do a good job for the consumer and specialize rather than trying to be bumper to bumper. Even though the vehicle is so integrated today, you have to know how the systems are integrated. But I see the problem is the shop owners who don't want to spend the money. I see the technicians who are required to buy their own scan tools, things like that. You're not going to have effective repair industry when you're asking technicians to lay that kind of money out when the owner is making that money on their own.
Rick, what's your opinion? Do you believe the shop owner needs to just set that precedent that they're going to buy the high-tech equipment or even all of the tools for a technician today?
Well, I do believe that the shop should be providing the more sophisticated equipment. As far as the hand tools, I don't know what the requirements are outside of California, but I was just talking to a student last night, and he's aware of some things I mentioned. In California, if you require the technician to provide their own tools, they're paid double minimum. So they bring their own box to work. They're required to pay them double minimum. So this particular student told me that they made their boss aware of it, and the boss had a conniption and told them to all take their tools out of there, but they haven't taken them out yet because he hasn't gone and bought the tools that he was going to buy for them. I'm talking the basic hand tools, but double minimum now. And in California, I think we're talking now, what, $22 an hour under the new requirements? That's one of the problems we have. The shop owner, to me, the business owner, should be responsible for providing that equipment for the shop.
It's sure not hard to figure out the ROI. It's just a simple spreadsheet or a yellow pad and a calculator, and you can figure out if you should invest or you shouldn't, or, you know, and pay the extra wage. That's an interesting law. California's got a lot of laws, don't they?
Oh, you mean the regulation state of the nation?
Yeah, you know, and New York's never too far behind. And, you know, if you guys do it, they say, wait a minute, it's good for California, it must be good for Buffalo. Now, you're busier than ever, and you are, I think, retired.
This June will be 2 years for me from full-time teaching, but I'm still doing adjunct one or two classes a year. I've been doing some contract training and enjoying the family and the grandkids.
Yes, you work so hard to enjoy that. And the adjunct work, the part-time work you're doing for the school, you're going in and doing what, a couple of engine performance classes a year?
Now I'm doing an 8-week OBD2 class. And the beauty of that is I go in, teach, and I don't have to deal with all the politics, what teaching is all about. See, another nationwide problem we have is if you surveyed instructors across the country, you would find out that the teaching aspect of it has dropped to about 40 to 60% of the job.
I've heard that. Now, was it you that told me that, or another educator that I interviewed that said we're just not getting enough FaceTime classroom time because there's so much admin?
Well, you're getting the time. What's happening is the time outside of class that you need to properly prepare for your class, you're doing so many other things. And I don't think there's an educator that could watch this and say, oh, that's not happening to me. I don't care where they are in this country. Their teaching ability is being diluted by all the outside requirements of committees. And we call shared governance. People wanted to say, but now where it's costing is in the classroom. And I projected this 25 years ago to a chancellor. I said, we're down to 90%. Well, when I left, as far as I'm concerned, we were down to about 40 or 50%. And the teacher is drained. A lot of that information I was telling you about earlier, the videos I made, I used to do that in the afternoons. I researched in the afternoons. The last 5, 6, 7 years, I couldn't do that. And that became very frustrating because I had to go off to a meeting. I had to be, you know, some kind of committee. It takes away from what we're hired to do and do best, and that's teach our subjects.
So why all the committees and why all the meetings? It's not so they could check a box. Are they actually asking you for your input?
It's partially, a good part of it is checking boxes, to be honest with you. There's committees you're on that the administration, who get paid well to do what they do, and they do a great job. At our college, they did a great job. We're there to confirm what they're doing because we don't have the time and energy to do the research on the data they provide us. We trust in them. They talk it. They bounce it off of us. We give some ideas. But in the end, we ultimately wind up going with what they projected because we just don't have the time to pursue it.
You don't have the time. And think back your 31 years in post-secondary, how much different it was from back then in teaching into what it is today. I know you wrote a great article on that. Give me a little slice of the comparisons that you see.
You're at a college level. And most of the time colleges like, you know, reward you somehow for your expertise. And that expertise included research outside the classroom. If you were at the University of California, you'd be given time to research, maybe write, do things like that, and then maybe teach 2 or 3 classes and have an associate to do a lot of your paperwork, your grading. When I came in, the program was just starting to expand. That was when computer controls were coming out. The industry was really starting to change. Thank God back then that I had the time to do the research I did, because if that had happened today or in the last 5 to 8 years, it never would have happened. There would not have been any time in the day. I'd have been copying out of the books the way people had written and saying, well, this is what it says. And my objective back in the late 80s was to start to prove, especially with OBD2, what the book said and how wrong it was. But I had time to do it. Then as the priorities of the campus and the district and the administration changed, the ability to do that just began to dwindle.
Thanks for your perspective on that. I appreciate that. It's so exciting to have an educator on the show and help us all learn and understand that you're out there teaching our future. Do you see the ranks? And a second part question is, it's going to be difficult to find quality techs down the road, a la the technician shortage. Your perspective on that?
The biggest change I've noticed, and you can take this back to no vocational skills at the junior high level, the high school level. So we had students used to come in at a much higher level than they do now. So you elevated their skills. Now what's happening is they're what I call wannabes. They think they want to do this. They've met the requirements to get in our program because our program has a special application. You have to meet minimum requirements to get in, and they're searching it out. We have a 3-year program. So the ones that were with me the last year, they pretty well knew what they wanted to do. They had already been working part-time. The last year I was there, 25 of the 27 were working, had been working. The ability, the knowledge level coming in is much lower than it used to be. And it's taken more time to bring them up to speed than it used to be. And now, you know, people are expecting them to be bumper to bumper even at that level when they come out because they're coming from an ATEST certified school. Hey, they're still entry level.
You know, Rick, I've seen Mike Rowe, who is so big on skilled labor. I've seen him working with the carpenters, with the electricians and the plumbers. And of course, he so firmly believes in the automotive tech side. What's it going to take to convince the parents today that Johnny can work with his hands?
When they go to get their car fixed, their something else fixed, the non-automotive, and they have to wait days, they have to pay much more. And they have to find someone skilled enough to fix it right the first time. That's when people are going to start saying, what's wrong? We're already there to a degree. Micro hits it beautifully about, you know, we're going to be looking at 2 million, shortage of 2 million skilled workers in the next few years, especially with more of the baby boomers retiring.
It's a skilled labor brain drain. You know, one of the things that you had on your educator think tank, Mike Davidson, who's been on the show a couple of times, was talking about a real great mentorship program. And that is, it's almost like grow your own, right?
Yeah, that's what you have to do. Any good shop today has got to start going to the schools and handpicking these people that have decided to take this training and start selecting some quality individuals early on while they're in the program and train them. Most of us cut our teeth in service stations. Well, service stations, I don't know about your neck of the woods, but our neck of the woods service station repair shops are about gone. They're mini marts. You know, that's where we cut our teeth. Today, they cut their teeth with the mass merchandisers, but the independent that wants this person has got to make a commitment early on, because if they call me up and say, do you have a graduate available? I say, if I have a graduate available, you might not want that person if they haven't been working. The skill level probably isn't there. They've already been employed by someone else. They're pretty loyal. They're going to stay where they're at. They've invested in them. But the business owner today is so stressed at trying to make ends meet, make that profit. They're not looking far enough in the future and say, I got to grow my own. Use that word earlier, grow your own. You got to grow your own today. And there's a lot of great programs around this country to draw from.
On the show, Rick, we've talked about getting involved in an advisory council at the college. I'm going to guess that you are a big proponent of that.
Oh, yeah. And when I left Skyline, and they're having, matter of fact, in about 8 minutes, well, today at 8 minutes, we're going to have, they're going to be having their advisory meeting in the college. They'll have between 20 and 25 employers there, or companies, tool people, shop owners, dealerships, former students. That's a strong advisory board.
I just submitted my resume and application to our community VoTech College. And I used to be on their board in the 90s. And I said to myself, listen, I'm going to do this. I know too many people in the industry, guys like you and Trish Serator and George Rance and all these guys that I know I could bring value to the local college. But, you know, I go back to this whole independent focus. Are there enough independents at career days getting involved so that some of the grads get into the independent side because the dealerships seem to lure them?
Yeah. We have one. We have a young lady that went through our program that's teaching for us, and she runs a career advancement academy. She was on the panel at this last Vision conference, Julia Johnson. She had a career day this semester. She had 40 employers there, from independents to dealerships to mass merchandisers. She actually had to turn them away because she had no more room for them.
Are the independents getting involved enough?
Not as much as they should, but they're so busy in their day-to-day operations, it's very difficult. But our success at getting them to career days has been very good. Getting them on an advisory board, participation has been very good. Like everything else, it's no different than the premier program, which I call working at Disneyland for 31 years. And then you can go to 50 other schools that are nowhere near that. It's the same with the independents. You have some out there that you need to do, and you have others that they'd rather steal from someone, or they'll bring someone in and take a shot at it, and then they're looking for someone else, and the cycle just goes on and on and on. I've been known as kind of the neutral brand in the industry. I can be critical of independence. Of industry, of automotive. I'll be proponents for both sides. Everybody wants to point their finger the other way. Always say is keep pointing it at yourself, because that's the only thing that's going to help fix this industry. I'm going to speak for Skyline. We offer 90 units of automotive training. Our generic program, 90 units. You know how close we're on our way to a BA. They're going to college, but they're going to go out and get a career that could last a lifetime. And at the very least, they're going to get skills that they can use throughout their whole life and go some other aspect of mechanical work, automotive, or some area. We've had students who left and gone and become electrical, gone to the electrical industry, and they're electricians, and they helped build Google down the peninsula from us.
Rick, you mentioned 90 credits in your three-year program.
Well, I think the thing you need to understand is that the 3 years basically is covering all the ASE areas, 1 through 8.
They're not getting into business and marketing and management. Okay. But do you offer the four-year degree up at Skyline?
No. There's right now it's a pilot program in California. And right now the only school that's running a pilot program that was approved to run it was Rio Hondo College in Whittier, California. I think they would be a good one for you to talk to about the BA program. We were in the running, but our district, they only picked a couple. This is a pilot. They decided in our campus, respiratory therapy. And to be honest with you, I was quite fine with that, because I've never had an employer who asked me when they went to hire the student, do they have a degree? What they really want to know is attitude, attendance, appearance. Are they trainable? And can they learn to fix cars? The degree will not do that by itself without the work experience. So to me, for automotive, degree is, we encourage it. We do offer the degree, but they need so much automotive experience with us. Those 3 years is just doing automotive.
Rick, what's next on your agenda? You're retired, you're teaching, you're involved with Vision and the Educator Think Tank. What's next?
Stay involved in the industry, continue to be involved with Vision. Keep expanding my training materials, because I think they're unique, and just continue being in this industry. I've got 45 years invested in this industry. So many good people out there that want to make this industry better. I love being around them.
I'm really excited to have had you on the show. I was inspired. I love your attitude, and it's so positive. It was so great to meet you, and the way you are so involved in our industry. You're just making it better. So thanks for so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Carm. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, thank you, Rick Escalombre, for paying it forward and sharing your wisdom exclusively for the Remarkable Results Radio listener. Hey, you know, Rick had so much to say and continues to be so active in the education side of our industry, and I want to have him back to hear more of his insights on education and aftermarket training. Rick has his own show notes page. Go to remarkableresults.biz/E218. And thank you for joining us and your support of the podcast. I know you're finding a treasure trove of wisdom in the archive of episodes. You now have the Town Hall Academy as a personal resource for your learning pleasure. Go to remarkableresults.biz/learning. Hey, everything you could possibly want to know about the show and the powerful content is now on my homepage. Stop by remarkableresults.biz and spend a few moments. And please share this content-rich resource with your friend. I'm grateful and thankful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.